I'm extremely excited to begin Yonah. I don't think we're going to do it all today, but I would like to at least get to a certain point. Of course, we're doing Yonah right now because we're going into Yom Kippur, Bezra Hashem, and of course that's the Haftorah of the of Mincha of Yom Kippur is Yonah, after Yonah, and it's a fascinating sefer. It's a sefer that on the surface makes no sense, is very, very bizarre. But when you understand it, when you begin to understand it, it makes so much sense, and it's so beautiful, and there is so much to understand. By no means am I going to suggest we're going to understand everything, but I'm going to try to delve into it a bit. Okay, and it's a fascinating, fascinating sefer. Yonah, to begin with, his actions don't seem to make a lot of sense. He seems to act in a very irrational way. In almost a clinical sense, almost a textbook sense, he acts in an irrational way. That's number one. Number two is, and you know, he acts irrationally, and we'll get into that in just a little bit, but aside from the fact that Yonah acts in such a bizarre way that, you know, really has to be understood, at least it's bizarre until you put it into a context. But number two, sorry, Shankar, I'll get to him in just one second. Second, what I just want to say, then you have that whole fish story, right? Which is just strange. I don't understand that that's a strange story. And I just wanted to, before we begin our discussion, and we'll start with Shankar and Kayla, but before we even get to anything, before we even read the first pasuk or any comments, any questions, anything, I just wanted to share with you a methodology or a principle that I always find very helpful in learning Tanakh. And that is, if there is a word, a phrase, a perek, a section, whatever it may be, if there's a component that seems to be extraneous, or it seems to be just weird, but bichlal, you look at it and you go like, why is that there? It would have been so much better if it just weren't there. So I have a rule that I always find works. Pay careful attention to that component. It's going to be of central importance. It's going to have tremendous, tremendous significance. Okay, I always find that to be very, very true. The fish story is a case in point. The fish story seems bizarre. But when you understand it, it's a very integral part of the story, and Sefer Yonah doesn't work without it. It's very, very important. Okay, yes, please.
That's on a notebook.
Of course, sure. Of course. You don't have to ask. We're all adults here. Just do what you have to do. Yes?
I feel like in this story, like, the thing that would seem out of place was the Kikayon story. Like, the fish is part of the storyline.
Okay, but say, I'm not saying that. I was giving different examples. I was saying something that appears either extraneous or bizarre, or in this case, it's not so much that's extraneous, but that's bizarre. It is a strange thing, right? This is not normal, right? So, I mean, if it weren't a strange enough story in and of itself, the fact that the fish can't make up its mind whether it's male or female, right? It goes back and forth between being a dog and a dagan and a dog. I mean, that's very strange. It can't keep straight, which it is for you know, in one pair. It's a strange. So this strange story. We have to understand. Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't as clear as I should have been. Okay, Chavra, Yonah. Let's take a look. Okay, first of all, Yonah acts in such a strange way. Right, Yonah acts in a strange way. Number one, the fact that Yonah, who says himself, right? Yonah himself says, when he's asked who he is, in Pasuk Tet of Perek Aleph, he says, Vayomar lehem, Ivri anofi, Vet Adonai Elohe HaShamayim Ani Yarei, Asher Asa Et Hayam Ve'et Hayabasha. Okay? Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tet. Yonah says that I'm an Ivri, which we have to, by the way, remind me if I forget to discuss about what the word Ivri means, and particularly in this context, please ask me, and we will come back to it at the very end, B'li Neder. But in any case, for the moment, he says, I'm a Jew, and I, I fear Hashem, I'm awe of Hashem, who created the Yam and the Abasha. Right? Now, Yonah is, and not that this is a chiddush, but it's explicit. Yonah is clearly aware that Hashem is also the God of the Yam. And yet he runs away. He runs away at sea, which is just a strange thing. The fact that a Navi is running away from Hashem Bichlal, that a Navi is trying to reject his mission, is very difficult, and some Gaonim and Rishonim, such as Rav Saadia Gaon, for example, are very bothered by this to the degree that they really try to reinterpret the story in very difficult ways. It's a very strange thing. We find certainly Nevi'im who say to Hashem, I don't want this mission. That there are certainly a number of Nevi'im. But that's not the same as Yonah. Yonah, Mamish, doesn't say, please pick someone else, as Moshe did, or Yirmiyahu did. He just packs his bags and goes, right? He just leaves. He cuts out. He says, I'm not doing it. That's very unusual. We have to understand that. What makes Yonah tick? What makes him think that going on a ship is he's going to be escaping from God? How do you run away from God? By getting on a ship. It just doesn't make sense. When Yonah is in the ship, and there's this huge storm, and everyone is going out of their skin, and then, you know, it's like this big Titanic scene, and they're all... I never saw the movie, but I'm talking about the event. But in any case, sorry, I didn't see it. I don't know. Here it's good, but I just can't... It's just not my thing. Okay. No, I'm not... I don't want to watch people drowning for 6 hours. It's just not something that... It's not my idea of entertainment. I'm sorry, but okay. Okay, in any case, it doesn't matter. The point is, I'm not bashing anyone who enjoyed it. It's fine. I'm just not an interested person. My point is simply that Yonah is there, and everyone's going crazy, and they're all about to drown. And what does Yonah do? He goes down for a nap. He says, I'm going to die. I want to be well rested. You know, it's just like not normal, right? It's a little strange. He's sound asleep. They have to wake him up. He sounds asleep. They're in the middle of the storm where they're all drowning, and he's going to take a nap. That is strange. Right? That is strange. When Yonah is inside of this fish in the middle of the water for 3 days, and he says, Etfilah. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were Chas v'Shalom stuck in the inside of a fish in the middle of the water, right, and I were saying a tefillah, I know which of the three categories of tefillah would be the main focus. Right? It would clearly be Bakasha. Get me out of here, please. Right? I mean, that's what would be first and foremost on my mind. You look at Perek Bet. Look at Perek Bet, right? Palel Yonah El Adonai Elha Min Me'eh Adagah, and you read Perek Bet, and I know there are different interpretations, but the simple reading of Perek Bet is you read his tefillah, and it sounds the parallel, the closest parallel to what Yonah says here in Perek Bet is Hallel, right? It sounds like Hallel. It's all this Shavach and Hodah. I'm not saying maybe you can find a little bit of Bakasha, but it's not easy to find even a little bit of it. But certainly, it's subject to interpretation, of course, and v'chulei, but the simple reading of it is that's almost entirely, if not entirely, Shavach and Hodah, which is a strange thing for a person who's inside of a fish in the middle of the water to be saying. Right? Isn't that strange? It's just strange. This is a path. You look at each one of these individual things, each one is strange. You put it all together, it's very bizarre. It sounds like it's just not the way a normal person reacts to things. So I'd like to try to give us a box to put Yonah in, a framework to understand Yonah. And the core, the kernel of the idea comes from Chazal in a Mechilta, which... Don't look at it yet. Give me 1 minute. I want to preface it just with a comment. We'll look at the Masechta together in just a minute. I want us to think about the following for a moment. If we were to, and I'm saying this only as a thought experiment. I don't mean this, okay? I don't mean this. I mean it as a thought experiment only. if we were to posit that Yonah is indeed, he is clinically, mentally ill, right? And we were to give a diagnosis, right? We diagnose Yonah, and if you were the psychologist writing up a report on Yonah, and you were giving your diagnosis, and you had to give a one-word summary of the nature of Yonah's mental illness. Again, I'm talking about a thought experiment. I don't think Yonah was really mentally ill. I'm just saying this by means of illustration and to focus our ideas. What diagnosis would you give him? One word. Okay, I don't know if that's a psychological diagnosis. Maybe.
Schizophrenic.
Okay.
Breakdown.
Okay. I have a different word that I would use. But okay, Seder. I have a different diagnosis. What would you say? Denial? Okay.
I don't think
I think you're leaving out the obvious.
Depressed.
What?
Crazy.
Okay. But crazy doesn't tell me what the particular, it's like saying someone's sick, but you don't need to go to the doctor
with
that.
When you imagine the wrong thing.
Okay.
Dementia.
Let's look at the Mechilta. The Mechilta gives a different answer, which I think is so compelling. Al Derech HaPshat. This is really the Pshat.
No!
It's fine with me. Okay. The Mechilta in Parsha Bo says the following. Rabbi Natan Omer, Lo halach Yonah ela la'abed atzmo bayam, shene'emar Vayomer Alehem Sauni Vatiluni Alaya.
Suicidal.
Okay. Yonah is not crazy. Far from it. But if we were to give a psychological label, it would be suicidal. If you look at everything he does from that perspective, everything makes sense. Okay? To the degree that being suicidal makes sense. But we'll understand why it makes a lot of sense in his case. The point is, Yonah is suicidal. Now look how that everything fits together, okay? What does Yonah do? Yonah wants to run away. Yonah wants to run away. He wants to escape. He wants to get away. He knows God has a mission for him, which he absolutely is not willing to undertake. That much we know. We have to understand why. And that we'll get to, but that's in just a few minutes. But Yonah is given a mission that he absolutely is not willing to undertake. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing in the world. So he wants to escape. He wants to run away. He wants to run away from God. He wants to run away from God giving him this job. How is he going to do that? So he has a plan. And his plan is he's going to try to force God's hand. Right? He's going to go and get on a ship, and ships in those days were a lot more dangerous than they are today. The danger of today, but there's no comparison. And he's going to go out to sea, and already he is in the very act of Kilo running away from God. He is giving God a reason to kill him. And he's saying, here I am, God, get me, right? He's not going to go and take a dagger and kill himself. But he's going to put himself in a situation where it's ma'od mistaber that he's going to, people drown at sea all the time in those days. And he puts himself in a situation. Rabbi Natan says, Mechilta says, a beautiful insight. Lo halach Yonah el abed atzmo bayam. He went because he wanted to commit suicide. I don't think that means that he was going to jump overboard. And it's clear from the end. It says, "Shenamar b'yomer alehem sauni v'atiluni al yam." Not that he jumps overboard, but when the sailors come to him and say, "What should we do with you?" He says, "Just throw me overboard." Right? You see what he wants. And if that's the case, that's what he wants to do. He wants to escape. He wants to get away from this mission. He wants to, in that sense, escape God. So when is he at peace? So the first time we find him at peace is when the plan begins to work, as far as he's concerned, right? When the ship is about to sink, when it looks like he's going to drown, when it looks like he's going to get what he wants, and his problem, his crisis, is being resolved, That's when he's at peace and he goes to sleep. Everything's good. And then things get better because he not only is thrown into the sea, but he's swallowed by a fish and he finds himself alive. But he's escaped from life and yet he's still alive. It doesn't get better than that. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, Yonah is in the fish. All he says is Shabbach and Hodah. He says, Baruch Hashem, this is great. Thank you. Why? Because he has escaped from life, which is what he wants, but yet he's still alive. Because he's not truly suicidal in the clinical sense. Okay, this is not the whole framework, but it's the first piece of it. Everyone understand why his actions and reactions make more sense if we posit this? Yeah, when he's in the fish, he has the best of both worlds. On the one hand, he is still alive, but on the other hand, he's escaped from life. Right? Now, this brings us to the question, why? Why is it the worst thing? Why is it worse than death? Okay, why is it worse than death to be given Yonah's mission? Why is Yonah's mission so abhorrent that he just can't live with it? Yonah cannot live with his mission. Who can tell me? Why is it? What's so terrible about what the mission that he's being given? Yes?
Things are going to cause themselves to be destroyed.
How?
Because then Nineveh is going to do tshuva and B'nai Yisrael will do tshuva. And then Hashem can get angry.
Okay, so this is the most standard answer, certainly, which I'm sure you know everyone's come across. And I'm not saying that no, but I think there's a simpler, more basic idea, and again, that's I think a midrashic idea that said, but I think it's something much simpler. Much simpler, yeah.
Maybe like if you would condemn Ben Israel, like then they would go and get him. They would hurt him.
Who would hurt him?
Ben Israel.
Because?
Because he's like the one condemning him.
He's not condemning B'nai Israel. He's sent to Nineveh.
Right, when Nineveh does well, B'nai Israel can say like, oh,
okay. Let's say that. Something much simpler.
When they're scared.
Something much simpler.
So we're them scared.
Yeah, scared they won't listen.
Okay, but we see that that's not true from the what he says in Perek Dalet. Because in Perek Dalet he says clearly that what he was afraid of, he says in Perek Dalet that he was afraid of, is that they would do tshuva and Hashem would forgive them. Okay?
I don't understand the concept of tshuva.
Okay. A little hard thing to say, though. Isn't that hard to say about you know, Yonah, who's a Navi, and not just here. He's a Navi in Sefer Melachim as well. I don't know. I find it difficult. I think we're forgetting something. I think we're forgetting something. Let me first introduce a different question, and then we'll come to the answer to this one, okay? Because there's one answer to both. Yonah resembles a biblical character, okay? First of all, he runs away from Hashem, okay? He hides from Hashem. That's number one, he hides from Hashem. And number two, when he is found, his belief is that when he is found, what should be done to him? What should the people who find him do to him?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Kill him. That the people who find him should kill him. Okay? Now, who do we know in the Torah who hides from God, number one, that his fate is to hide from God, and number two, that whoever finds him should put him to death? Who did I just describe?
That it goes away.
Okay, to a certain degree, but Cain, right? Certainly Cain's the first. First of all, Cain, let's say in Parsha Breshit, which we're, as Hashem, we're going to read very soon. Number one, Cain says, Umi panecha esater. Okay, first of all, he runs away, right? Vayiti na vanad ba'aretz, umi panecha esater. He runs away. He hides from Hashem. And vahaya kol motzi Yehargeni, whoever finds me will put me to death, says Cain.
He's not the one who wants to be put to death.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is a different part of the story, right? There's a different aspect. I'm not saying that they're identical. I'm saying there's a Cain-esque aspect to Yonah, okay? Why? Why does Yonah... Why? What's the connection between Yonah, at least in terms of his self-perception? Why is Yonah... Remember, it's Yonah who says that he should be put to death by the people who find him.
Cain
why?
Cain
killed his brother. Good.
He's
killing his brethren. Excellent. How is he killing his brethren? So you gave me a midrashic explanation. Beseder, very nice. But I think there's a simple, there's a more fundamental pshat level explanation for it as well. Let's think about this for a moment. What is Yonah's mission? What's he told to do? To do what? Okay, to give Nineveh a warning so that they have the opportunity to do tshuva and Hashem will forgive them and they will survive. In other words, his mission is in effect to save Nineveh. Who's Nineveh? What? Bnei Yisrael's enemy. Okay, let's be more specific. Who is Nineveh? Well, what's Nineveh? What's the city of Nineveh? What's the significance of Nineveh? What is Nineveh? It's a city. Sin doers, okay. They're bad. Yeah, true. Okay. But who are they? Who's Nineveh? If I sent you to go looking for Nineveh, where would you go? Okay, excellent. Nineveh is what? What's the relationship between Nineveh and Nineveh and Asher? What's the relationship?
Brother.
Excellent. Great. Oh. You know some Tanakh. Wonderful. Nineveh is the capital city of Ashur. Okay, this is the core of Ashur. Nineveh is Ashur. Okay, and what's the relationship between Ashur and Bnei Yisrael? Let's be more specific. Between Ashur and Malchut Yisrael, where Yonah is the Navi. Yonah is the Navi of Malchut Yisrael. The people who are going to destroy Malchut Yisrael, right? The destroyers of Malchut Yisrael. Who's the destroyers of Malchut Yisrael? This Ashur. The capital of Ashur is Nineveh. Yonah is given... Imagine this for a moment, right? You have to... You know, this happens in a real context. This happens in real life. What happens here? Yonah is given a mission to go and save Ashur, which a few years later, a little bit down the road, a blink in the larger context of Jewish history, is going to destroy Malchut Yisrael. Does that begin to put the story of Yonah into context a little bit? See what I'm saying? Imagine. Just imagine for a moment, right? Imagine for a moment some Navi living in Berlin in, let's say, I don't know, the 1930s, early 1930s, right? Is told, a Navi, he knows where history is going, he understands where events are leading us, and he's told one fine morning, God comes to him in a vision and says, your job this morning, there's this guy, Adolf Hitler, he's going to walk down the street, and your job is to, you know, stop him from crossing the street, because if he crosses the street, he's going to get hit by a bus and get killed. Your job is to save him. You understand the problem? Do you understand what Yonah is feeling? Right? Yonah, as a Navi, and I'll show you Bli Neder as we continue, not yet, but we'll get to it. Yonah is a Navi. It doesn't mean a Navi doesn't know everything. But Yonah, we see from the Pesukim in Sefer Melachim, if we read them carefully, Yonah understands where Jewish history is going in terms of Malchut Yisrael at that point. He knows where things are headed. And it's not Ke'ilu, it's not so far in the future that that someone else might not have known this, but Yonah knows full well what's going to happen. I mean, the general kivun of events. And Yonah is told, go save Asher. Go save Nineveh. He'd rather die. right? If it, anything but being the one to be responsible for saving the people who a little bit down the road are going to destroy, who are going to kill his brethren, that's, he'd be an accomplice in their murder. He'll be a kayin. He doesn't want that. And so he runs away from Hashem. He says, I'm going to go. Lo halach Yonah ela be'atzmo b'yam. He goes, he says, Sa'uni v'atuluni ayam. If he can get someone else to do it for him, whether it's God, whether it's sailors, whoever it is, someone can, you know, help him to escape from life, then he's going to do it. Everyone with me so far? Understand? Yeah, that's the first thing we have to understand. Okay, the first thing we have to understand. Okay, let's go a step further. Let's go a step further. There's a lot to discuss, but let's go a step further. I want to talk about the dog for a moment.
The what?
The dog. Or daga, as the case may be. Perek Bet. Vayiman Adonai dag gadol levala et yonah vayhi yonah b'mei hadag shlosha yamim u'shlosha lelot. Okay, follow very carefully. Yonah Perek Bet. Okay, Pascal. Hashem, Vayiman is not an easy word to translate, but he prepares for me, causes, he brings about, that this is dag gadol, this large dog, that swallows Yonah. And Yonah is in the me'ayim, in the insides of the dog, 3 days. 3 days and 3 nights. Okay? Let's begin the story. Pasuk bet. Vayipalel Yonah l'Adonai Elohav mime'ei hadaga. Yonah prays from the insides of the daga, not the dog, but the daga. And we have the whole tefillah, and then pasuk yud aleph by yomer adonai ladag. Once again, it's a dog, right? Vayake et yonah el hayabasha. It vomits him out to the dry land. Now, dog, daga. When it talks objectively, it calls it a dog. Now, I mean, some, you know, there are midrash explanations. He got thrown back and forth, right? First he was swallowed by a dog, then by a dog, then he was spit out, then he was swallowed by a dog, then he was swallowed by a dog.
The less comfortable one.
Okay. However, I think there's a simpler explanation. The simple explanation is that there's a difference between the objective reality and the experience of Yonah. When it talks about it in terms of Yonah, it calls it a daga, me'eh daga. When it talks about, just from an objective perspective, or in terms of Hashem, let's say, Pasuk Aleph and Yud Aleph, it talks about a dog. Why? So, first of all, it's very, I mean, the starting point is very simple. Think about this for a moment. What, you know, if you picture Yonah inside the, you know, b'me'ei hadaga, even the language that's used is suggestive of what kind of a Yonah inside the dog is like. What? What's the natural image that emerges? Right. It's like he's like an embryo inside of, right, and the fetus inside of a mother, which is, I think, the natural explanation for why, although physically it's described in terms of Hashem, it's described as a dog, but in terms of Yonah, it's described as a daga, because that's his experience, like being in the womb. Now you see why that's important in just a moment. But keep in mind, okay, so it's like he's in the womb. Then what happens? He is ejected from this dog / daga. And that experience is very much like what? I mean, the experience of being, right, it's like he's born.
Then it should be a woman's thing.
No, but because here it's talking about in reference to Hashem. And it's wherever it's talking about in reference to Hashem, it talks about a dog. It's only where it talks about his subjective experience that talks about a daga. You know what I'm saying?
I understand, but
what
that has to do with the womb, it should be a daga either way. But it's subjective or objective.
Why? No, I'm saying it's physically it was a dog, but from in terms of his experience, it was like being inside a daga. You know what I'm saying? That's the dichotomy. My point is that we have something very fascinating, which is that Yonah initially thinks that he has escaped from life by being swallowed by the dog, right? Or to put it differently, he thinks that he is post-life, right? That he has, that he is, you know, after his life. But in fact, what happens? Right, he's reborn. It's really, it's like pre-life, not post-life when he's in the dog. And so he's reborn. Okay, he's reborn. Now, let's go a step further. The experience of being in the dog is very much a dreamlike experience. Right, everyone sees that? It has like a dreamlike experience. In fact, there was one scholar, you know, David Shapiro, collection of essays called Studies in Jewish Thought, I believe. Anyhow, very fascinating essay in which he suggests that Yonah is actually asleep and this is a dream that he has.
Who says
this? First, my name is David Shapiro. I don't think that's the pshat because Vayiman sounds like it really happens. But I will say that there are even nuances in the psukim that sound like this, that he doesn't mention, but I think one could mention, because if you notice, the sailors tell Yonah to get up, and it doesn't say that he got up, but then in pasuk, in Perek Gimel, pasuk bet, it says, kum lech el ninveh er gdolah, and then in pasuk Gimel it says, vayakam Yonah. In any case, I don't think he's really dreaming, and the suggestion is that he's still in the, you know, dreaming in the boat. I don't think that fits, but it's only a dreamlike experience. Meaning, we have to understand in a symbolic way. Meaning, not that it doesn't actually happen, but that there is a symbolism that's going on here. Now, let's think about this for a moment. We have Yonah. Okay, everyone, if you want art, you have to go to my wife's class. I am not the artist in the family. But this is just a representation. It's not a real picture. It's just a representation. We have dog slash daka. And inside we have Yonah. Okay? Yes? Okay. It has to be a big fish. It can't be a sardine or a tuna. It's not going to work. It says it's a dog gadol, right? Right? It says explicitly it's a dog gadol. Ve'man Hashem dog gadol. And Yonah is inside the fish for, what are we told?
3 days.
Okay. Now, who's good at interpreting dreams? I didn't mean that. I meant who here. You're right. What? Ah, very good. Okay. So, let's think together. Let's think for a second. What does the fish represent? It helps, by the way, aside from, you know, kind of good grounding and like Jung and stuff like that, it's also very helpful if you know cuneiform.
You know what?
That's like Mesopotamia.
It's like, you know, the like the picture writing, you know,
the ancient.
It's a little bit like that. It's a little bit different, but it's similar to that. Who knows? What would a fish be in cuneiform? Yeah? Okay. So, it's important to keep in mind here. Now remember, we are a little bit removed in time and place from the original writing of Sefer Yonah. But, were we to have lived in the time of Yonah, in the time of Sefer Yonah, we would know that, ready for this? The symbol, the way that you would write in cuneiform, Ninveh, is a fish. A fish inside of a little house. Okay? But basically a fish. Okay? A fish was the symbol of Ninveh. Okay? How do I know that? It's a well-known fact. And it's brought down if you look in any number of places.
How do you spell cuneiform?
I'm not good at spelling, but something like that. I'm probably off by a little bit. But anyhow, so follow carefully. A fish is a symbol for
Ninveh.
What are we told about Ninveh? What do you know about Ninveh? From Yonah itself. It's Ha'ir HaGedola. Okay? Yonah is swallowed by Adag Gadol. Okay, everyone see it? You seeing it? Yes?
Yeah.
Let's go a step further. I know it's going to sound like a bad joke, but it isn't. Not because it's a good joke, it's just not a joke at all. But I have a simple question for you. And how big is Nineveh? It says Nineveh is big. How big is Nineveh? Now, how big is Nineveh? We know how big Nineveh is. Come on. It says in the Psukim, how big is Nineveh?
Also, no.
You have it?
No.
Mahalath Shoshayamim. Okay, it's a three days. Right. Takes 3 days to walk. Where is it? Okay,
let's see. For 3 days.
So let's take a look. This is. Of course. Yes. You got it. Good. Give me a second. It says here. It's in Perakim or Pasuk Gimel. Vayakam Yonah. Yes, but I think that other people say it also, at least part of it, for sure. Because it's really obvious that like the at least the part about the cuneiform is. Anyway, the point is like this. So if we know that the symbol, right, the way that you would write Nineveh in ancient times was a fish, and we're told that Yonah is inside of this fish that is for 3 days, right, it's a big fish, and Nineveh is Ha'ir HaGdolah, and the dimension is three, right? So Pashud, that what? That was the fish represent? The city of Nineveh. And what does Yonah represent? People of Nineveh, the people in the city, right? So Yonah represents people. And if Yonah represents the people of Nineveh, so when he, instead of finding himself dead in the fish, is spit out and thereby reborn, what does that symbolize?
That people are going to be reborn.
Okay, understand, right? This is the Od Arbam Yom V'Ninvei Ne'apachat. Chazal say, why Ne'apachat? Because there are two possibilities, right? It's still deliberately ambiguous language. It could mean Ne'apachat in the sense of destroyed, or Ne'apachat in the sense of transformed, reborn. Either is possible. If they do tshuva, they'll be reborn, they'll be transformed. If they don't do tshuva, they'll be destroyed. Those are the two possibilities. Now, tiny bit further.
Could it be, since it's two options, since Yonah did run away from his mission originally, so now, like maybe before I was set in stone that Asher would destroy Malchut Yehuda, so then once then he like, said stone it would be. Like if we had gone to Bay originally and said right. Like do tshuva, they would have listened, then maybe the thing.
Oh yeah, it could be that it's, but he's worried that it's going to work, right? My point is as follows. What I'm trying to say is like this. Very simple point. What happens after Nineveh, after Yonah is spit out of the fish? Hashem says again to him, go to Nineveh. And what happens? Does he listen? Goes right away. Vayakam Yonah. He gets up, he goes, he does what he's told to do. What happened? Why is sudden transformation? I want to suggest something very simple. What does Yonah see in this fish story? Look what happens to him. He goes and he runs away from God, or so he thinks. He goes on this ship. He basically runs away from life. He escapes from life. He's thrown into the water. He's swallowed by a fish. He thinks that he's escaped from life, escaped from the mission. In the very act of running away, in the very act of trying to escape God's mission for him, what happens? He becomes a living symbol of the message that he's supposed to deliver.
Okay.
What?
He becomes a living symbol.
of that nevuah that he didn't want delivered to Nineveh. Because he inside of the fish represents the people inside of Nineveh, and his being spit out represents their being reborn. And the whole thing, he becomes a symbol in his very act of defiance, of trying to run away. He's a pawn in God's plan. He's delivering the message that he's running away from. Even as he runs away. And therefore, what does Yonah see? There is no escape. There is no escape. It's not just that, like, you know, God, you know, scooped him up in a big fish net and said, now you have to go. It's much more than that. Yonah looks back on all the things that just happened. When he thought he was running away, he was doing what God wanted him to do. He was being a symbol for this nevuah that he was trying to escape from. There's no escape possible. There's no escape possible. We'll see. Yeah, in other words, Hashem uses him as a symbol for the message to Nineveh, namely that Od Arba'im Yom and Nineveh Ne'apaka, when he is spit out, right, from this, you know, being in the womb state, and he's spit out and being reborn, so he and the fish represents Nineveh clearly, so he's making a statement against his will. He's making a statement about Nineveh, and therefore he sees that on the one hand, in terms of his actions, he has free will. But in terms of the consequences, it's God's plan, not his.
Becoming a symbol of
Nivu, he's trying to escape from. Meaning, he doesn't want to deliver this message to Nineveh, that Nineveh has the potential to be reborn, to be transformed, to do tshuva, right? That's the message he doesn't want to deliver. And look how he, in the very act of running away from it, is a symbol of that message. And what Yonah sees is a basic truth about life, which is that God gives us free choice almost always. There are exceptions, but almost always God gives us free choice in terms of the choices that we make. But a certain percentage of the time, not saying all the time, but a certain percentage of the time, God says you can make a choice about what you're going to do, but that doesn't mean you have a choice about how it's going to turn out. And sometimes, in the very act of trying to escape God's plan for us, we're carrying out God's plan. And that is something that is a basic characteristic of life, and there's what to discuss about it. Bezer Hashem, a different share, a different time, different whatever. Not for right now. But I'm just saying that that's an aspect of what happens here. And that's why Yonah changes his tune, because he sees that as much as he finds this mission something that he can't live with, he has no choice. There's absolutely no choice. There is no escape. And we'll talk more about the no escape part, that's Rav Shem, a little bit down the road, but for the moment I just wanted to make that point. Okay. Let's take a breath or two. Everyone with me so far? So far. Let's perhaps interject at this point the idea that, which is a very critical one, the issue of the judgment of Nineveh. Okay? Starting from the very, very, very beginning of Sefer Yonah, who is being judged? Who's being judged? What?
Yonah.
Yonah, in a certain sense. Nineveh, can you be more specific? What do you mean by Nineveh?
I don't know.
Okay. Fair. Yeah.
People of Nineveh.
You have a different answer? It's a trick question, don't worry. I would argue, why should I? Excellent. It's not the people per se who are being judged. I'll show this to you on several levels in just a moment. But it's not the people of Nineveh who are primarily being judged. They are being judged. It's true, they are certainly being judged. It's obviously the people of Nineveh, but it's not the people of Nineveh. It's the city, it's the society that's being judged. A city or a society or a place has a persona. It has a character. It has a character, right? It has a personality. I'm sure you've all experienced this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has everyone been to Manhattan sometime or other in their life? Mm-hmm. No. Not everyone. No. Okay. So you're not missing that much. But let me just tell you.
You've never been to the city.
I went to
some
for 2 days.
Okay, that counts. If you go to Manhattan, I've been to Manhattan in probably in like.
More than that.
But in any case, if you go, but I remember going to Manhattan and, you know, like driving in Manhattan is, like the only thing worse than driving in Manhattan is trying to park in Manhattan, right? It's just horrible. You go to Manhattan.
Worse than driving here?
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
It's just really, parking. It's really bad. Park, yeah. And there are these signs. Which you, I didn't do a study, but I imagine only exist in New York, only in Manhattan. They have these signs that say, or at least they used to, I don't know if they still, don't even think of parking here. Okay? Really, I'm not making this up. Don't even think of parking here. Now, you never seen those? I've seen many such signs. Maybe they don't have many more. I don't know. The signs, don't even think of parking here. That is a typical, that's a manifestation of kind of the personality. You know, Manhattan has a personality. You just cross the city line, right? You go into Yonkers, or certainly if you go into like Pennsylvania, you know, they wouldn't in a million years have a sign, don't think of parking here. You know what I'm saying? It's not... You can go from cross the city line into Yonkers, and the buses are totally different in terms of, you know, like the, it's just a different character to it. A society, a place has a personality. Nineveh, the place, the community, the society is being judged. How do I know that? So like anything else, I know because that's what the Pesukim say. Take a look at Pasuk Bet. Kum Lech. What does it say in Pasuk Bet? Perek Aleph Pasuk Bet. Kum leich l'Ninveh ha'ir ha'gdola ukra aleha. Go to Nineveh, the great city. It doesn't say go to the people of Nineveh. Go to ukra aleha, call out to it. And then the Pasuk continues. Ki alta ra'atam lifanai. The end of the Pasuk talks about the people. But it begins by talking about the city. And this explains a tremendous amount. For example, at the very end of Sefer Yonah, it says, Perek Dal Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'ani lo achus al Nineveh, ha'ir ha'gdola, shouldn't I have mercy on the great city of Nineveh, asher yesh ba harbeh mishtei mesrei ribo adam, there are more than 12 myriad people, asher lu adam ben yiminov l'smolo, and listen to the last two words, uvehema rabah, and many animals. You hear that? And many animals. What does that show you? It's a city, not the people, right? The animal.
That's
oh, that's excellent. Can you hold that thought for 1 minute? We'll get back to it, okay? Similarly, excellent. That was the last pasuk in Sefer Yonah. Perek Dal Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Wait, you said what you just said about the end.
Yeah, that when Hashem says, shouldn't I have mercy and not destroy Nineveh, which has so many people and a lot of animals? What do the animals have to do with anything? Right?
Where does it say that?
The last pasuk, Perek Dal Pasuk Yud Aleph. Or, when it says that Nineveh does tshuva, what does it say? That in Perek Dalet, it's also in Perek Dalet, okay? It says that, sorry. This is not necessarily on the sheet, but, give me a second. Ah, yes, Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav. Okay, Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav, the bottom of the first side. Vayaga davar el melech Ninvei. Vayaka mikiso vayavera datome alav vayichas sak vayeshev al ha'efer. Right, so the king starts to mourn. Who fasts? The king and the people and all the animals. What are the animals fasting for? And who wears sackcloth as a sign of mourning? The people and
animals.
The animals. What are you talking about the animals for? Clearly, because it's not a judgment of the people, it's a judgment of the city, judgment of the society. Now we can come back to your point. Like stone. Right? Like stone. How do you know that the judgment of Nineveh is like the judgment of stone? What's the nevuah to Nineveh? Od Arbam Yom. So, for example, Paragimel Pasuk Dalid. Vayachal Yonah Lavo Ba'ir Malach Yom Achad Vekra Vayomer Od Arbam Yom V'Nineveh Ne'apachet Kema Pechat Sidon V'Amora Ad Mal Soyim. It says at the end of the Zvar, right? Kima pechat Sidon ba'amora at Mal Tzvoyim, right? It says in Sefer.
Say that the ma pechat.
So the word ma pechat is used several times to refer to the destruction of stone, for example, in the end of Sefer Tzvah. Okay. Excellent. Let's go. Okay. Good. Let's. Now, and that's why, so let me just conclude this point by saying, and that's the whole thing about Nineveh being transformed, right? Meaning, that's not a question of these people being killed, they're chayav misa, it's a question of the society. Does society deserve to exist or not? And the society can be transformed, it can be remade, it can be reborn. What?
People could also be transformed.
Beseder, right. But the point is that Nineveh is going to be Ne'apacha, means that the city is going to have a different character. There is a... okay. By the way, the idea of rebirth as a symbol here is something that's pointed out in a number of sources. Okay, just very quick footnotes. Gemara Sanhedrin Adat Pei Tet. I just want to show you very quickly. These words: Sanhedrin Peitet by Yonah the Hadribev Lo Odiyuhu Yonah Mikar Ninveh Ne'apachet Amrile Iulo Yada Iulo Tovali Ra. And the idea that there's both connotations. The bottom of the page. When Sanhedrin tells us that's the source for the idea that Odar Bam Yom Ninveh Ne'apachet has a double meaning. That could be destroyed, or it could be reborn, could be reformed. Even more so, if you look on the bottom of the page, the second side, the Malbim on Yonah, Perek Bet, Pascal says, it talks about the idea of the symbol of rebirth. Okay, Ulam Kasher Gazan says. He talks about how Yonah inside the fish is like an embryo. It's like a fetus. The old David, who's a contemporary Rav in Brooklyn, says as follows. David Cohen, he says as follows. V'rgash mishum hachin nishlach Yonah. Yeah.
I think so.
There you go. V'rgash mishum hachin nishlach Yonah b'shlichud elu l'hazkir al tshuva v'tzliach shasat shasu tshuva. He says the following, very interesting, and this is based on a Chazal. Chazal say, as Yerushalmi said, the Chazal say that is actually a Chazal that's very dear to me. I'll show it to you for a second. It says that Yonah
right? His full name is Yonah ben Amittai. Why is he called Amittai? So Chazal suggests he's called Amittai because he's the child that was resurrected by Eliyahu Hanavi, right? What does that have to do with Eliyahu? Because at the end of that parak, the mother says to Eliyahu, Udvar Hashem v'ficha emet. Okay, so Amittai is from the word emet. Okay? Which is where we got the name for, the middle name of my second oldest son, Hillel Amittai. That comes from here.
Was he resurrected from Amittai?
No. But, no, just it's just I thought a beautiful name that connected to the idea of Emet and is. Yes, the old David says that that Chazal say that Yonah was brought back from the dead, right? He was resurrected. He says that so Rav David Cohen suggests that that's why Yonah is an appropriate person, right? To bring about the tshuva, to be the catalyst for the tshuva of Nineveh, because after all, right? After all, he was involved in Tchiyat HaMetim, and Tchiyat HaMetim is a paradigm for tshuva, right? Because tshuva is a rebirth. So, I'm just saying that I would say it a little bit differently, but the basic idea is like this. The basic idea is that when Chazal say that this was the child who was resurrected, the point is that you have to understand the central idea in the story of Yonah is this idea of Tchiyat HaMetim, this idea of rebirth, this idea of being brought back from the dead. That's the whole fish story. And that is a very powerful symbol of tshuva, and the fish is a symbol for Nineveh. Okay. Ad kan, a quick insight into the first three prakim of Yonah, okay, and what it's telling us. But that's not the end of the story. Not the end of the story. We then come to the Kikayon. We then come to the final chapter, Perek Daled. And I'd like to ask.
Well, what's the basic outcome of that again?
What?
So what happens against
the. Well, you're about to prepare it, so you'll see. But I'd like to ask you the following. Please follow carefully. I'd like to ask you to please. I'd like to ask you to please. Look at Perek Daled, but to begin not with the beginning of Perek Daled, but with the end of Perek Gimel. Please do the last couple of psukim of Perek Gimel, and then Perek Daled. Okay, and then we will talk about Perek Daled plus some global issues in Sefer Yonah, and try to bring the whole thing together. Okay. And there is a lot to discuss, but Ezra Hashem will try to do it succinctly. So.